Hi everyone, I'm your host Paola Castillo. Welcome to Too Girly, where women's issues are for everyone and on anything. Today we're going to be talking about the purity and modesty movement. So the year is the 1990s that this culture and movement was born. It was a result of the 1960s sexual revolution. Christians were trying to put a stop to the idea of sexual freedom to prevent premarital sex. This began the purity and modesty culture. It introduced programs such as True Love Waits, introduced purity pledges, and popularized the book Kiss Dating Goodbye by Josh Harris, a book that encouraged abstinence and courting. What many didn't anticipate was the negative effects that the culture would have on those exposed to it, an unhealthy obsession with sex, over-sexualization of underage girls, and forcing girls and women to take the blame for another person's actions are just some of the effects. With me today is Brenda Marie Davies. She's the owner of the Christian YouTube channel, God is Gray, and the owner of the podcast by the same name. Through these, she hopes to guide Christians into becoming more inquisitive, fearless, sex positive, and free thinking. She's also currently a maternity model for the Expecting Models agency. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Thanks for coming. Of course.
So before we start, I kind of want to say that this episode of the show might touch on touchy subjects that might be uncomfortable to other people, so
beware.
Put that out there. So I guess to start off, so you have a Christian-based YouTube channel, and many on that platform and others around it have kind of said it's a little too liberal for someone who's Christian. So what inspired you to create your YouTube channel?
Longest story short, I wrote a book about what Christians are now calling deconstruction. It's like, it's amazing because there's all this new lingo for things that were happening to me for like 12 years that I never put a name to. I just knew that I had tried saving myself for marriage. I was like, by the book, doing everything right, waited till 21 to have a drink. And I lasted till I was 22, but... Are you allowed to talk sexual stuff here?
Yeah.
I was like masturbating since I was like 5 years old. So waiting till I was 22 was actually like quite a feat. And I was really starting to lose my mind just physically and hormonally. And then when it came down to it, I started researching the Bible more because I was trying to justify like, no, I can't save myself anymore. Like, how am I going to do this? So I ended up actually just trying to have a one-night stand with somebody and get rid of my virginity because it had become like almost a plague to me. I've also dealt with anorexia and it felt very like similar. It was like you're abstaining from food and therefore 24/7 you think about food. That's how I began feeling about sex. So I wanted to just give it away and move on with my life, and instead, because of the purity movement and the messages I'd received, I didn't know what love was. It was my first serious relationship, but him and I continued to have sex, and I was living in so much guilt and so much shame that eventually I was like breaking down, and he was like, do you want to just get married? Because I don't know how else to help you with this that you're going through. So I ended up marrying him just out of that guilt, and I thought, I convinced myself, this must be God redeeming my sin of sexuality. Maybe he sent me my husband because we're all having this like knight in shining armor story put in our heads through purity culture. So I was like, maybe this is my husband and, you know, whatever. But anyway, I found out 2 years into our marriage that he had cheated on me the entire time. And he'd already been with people before we got together. So that was just adding more on. And that's when I started my path of deconstruction, which is what we're calling it now. But at the time, I just knew that I was losing my mind and separating myself from church and really questioning all this theology that I'd been taught. And I just came out of that feeling really whole and happy and starting to really realign my sexuality and my spirituality and come to terms with what I personally believed. And then I went on YouTube and found out that girls in their 20s were saying the same toxic, terrible things that had caused me and my friends in the 80s and 90s and 2000s so much damage to our sexuality. So I started God is Gray because I was like, I can't sit here and have these messages be perpetuated anymore. I have to say something.
Yeah. So you hope to achieve, like you say in the description, inquisitive, fearless, and sex positive. Is there anything else you hope to achieve?
Well, LGBTQIA inclusivity for sure. Not only inclusivity, but full affirmation. And I've been doing a lot of research on that. And there's a huge movement of gay affirming Christians and churches that are popping up. And I think that is beautiful because in the Bible, it says to look at the fruit. If you're planting seeds, you have to see how the fruit grows to see if the seeds you planted are healthy. So the doctrine of anti-LGBTQ or people need to change their sexuality, that fruit has been suicide, depression, you know, a myriad of really terrible things, even murder, you know, like the fruit is rotten and it's been rotten for decades. So now a lot of us are publicly questioning that, and it's a beautiful movement that's happening, and it needs to happen, and I believe it's a move of God. But also people always misunderstand my message when they have their like muffed ears and they just refuse to listen, because I try to make it so clear. I'm like, sex positivity and the message I'm spreading isn't do whatever you want, like nobody cares, like be free, you know, sleep with however many people you want in one night. I would never say any of that. The opposite, actually. I say that sex positivity is about learning how to align your sexuality and your spirituality so you're a holistic person, so you're making really informed, wise decisions about your sexuality. So for me, I became really promiscuous, and I was like abusing my body at points because I just was in such a state of rebellion from purity that I swung on the other side in the opposite direction. And I don't like living in regret. Like, I've apologized to myself, to God, to my body, to some of those partners that I also took advantage of. And to me, the thing is, the more you educate yourself and the more you allow God, and I don't care what word you use for that either, the divine, into your sexuality and really acknowledge that it's not just a physical act, there's so much more to it, then you will naturally make positive decisions with your body. And you might mess up, but you shouldn't go around crying and crawling across the floor over it every single time. It's just like you're acknowledging what hurts your partner. Are you honoring the people that you're bringing into your life, into your body? Are you honoring your body and your experiences? And that's what sex positivity is. And if that is saving yourself into your wedding night, God bless, and I respect you so much. And that is a beautiful decision. But make that decision out of your own autonomy and your own walk with God. I, on the other hand, I'm like, I'm a divorcee. I got pregnant with a friend that is my best friend. And we were just like, you know, falling in love and having sex every once in a while. And then it made a baby, which is the risk you run. That's another thing. It's like, if you're engaging in sexual activity, let's be honest about what that means and what that can lead to, and help you take the right precautions if you don't want a baby. But for me, as a divorcee in my 30s, I was like, I'm just not going to feel guilty about making love to my best friend. Yeah. And I'm not going to feel guilty about not marrying him right now because I'm not ready to. I'm getting to know him as a partner, as the father of my future child. Mm-hmm. So I want our, if we get married, I'd want that to be an expression of our commitment and this genuine journey we've been on, not because someone guilt tripped me into it.
Yeah. And so, like you said, a lot of purity culture is waiting till marriage.
Yeah.
So could you tell us what purity culture is and what modesty culture is and sort of like what they are?
Yeah. Before we started talking, you were saying that they are different. And it's true. They are different. And they're like in the similar vein. They're both very heavily female focused, but men get really messed up messages from both of them as well. So it harms all of us. And basically the purity movement, like you said, really got amped up in the 90s and the True Love Waits movement, where all these teenagers went to Washington and pledged their virginity on the lawn there. And statistically, about, I think, 10 to 15% of purity pledges actually make it. So, you know, most of those kids ended up banging, whoever, yeah, before they got married. And probably living in guilt and shame about it. And if you really want to dive into the result of purity culture and the history, Linda K. Klein wrote a book called Pure. You have to get it. It's amazing. But basically, purity says, I mean, it was really dangerous at that time, and it's kind of getting better, but it's still the same. They used to do things like take a glass of water and have everyone spit in the glass of water in youth group and then bring it to the last guy and say, would you would drink this? And that was supposed to be a woman being passed around to men. And they would do things like take a chocolate bar and break off pieces and then give the last guy one tiny slice and say, do you want this chocolate bar? No, wouldn't you rather have the full one? So the implication was always, if you are a woman specifically, every time you have sex, you are diminishing your literal value as a person and as a sexual being. And to me, now looking at it, I'm like, oh my God, how were adults ever comfortable saying that message? But when I talk to the adults from that era, and a lot of them are on their hands and knees apologizing to us that they imparted those messages to, including my youth pastor, she ended up apologizing to me nearly in tears because they just, maybe coming out of movements that were more promiscuous and free love, really thought they were going to protect us from unwanted pregnancies, from heartbreak, et cetera. It was like, you know, the road to hell paved with good intentions was what that really was. So it didn't protect us. It just made us feel worthless. And then trigger warning about assault. But imagine the implication if a girl has already been assaulted and watching her youth group pass around a glass of water, spitting in it and telling them, I mean, I could cry even, yeah. I'm pregnant, I'm very emotional, but like I could cry honestly thinking about that and imagining, you know, we know the statistics of assault. That's a lot of women that were told they were worthless after assaults. And then for modesty, that goes into such easy victim blaming. It's terrible. Like, modesty culture says that men are visual creatures, which is another annoying message to give to men. Like, hey, you're an insatiable beast. You can't control your sexuality. You're just, you know, flailing around. And if a girl's skirt is short enough, who knows what you'll do? Like, what kind of thing is that to tell to a teenage boy? It's ridiculous. And also it minimizes the fact that they have emotions and they're capable of making love and they're capable of wanting a woman, you know, in every capacity, not just sexually. So that's damaging to them in that way. But for the girls, it was, if you're wearing that short skirt, what did you expect? Or you were inviting something. Like, you need to honor your body by covering it up. Otherwise, there's a book in the Bible that has nothing to do with how women dress. Or it's a verse about not putting a stumbling block in front of your brothers and sisters. Or their sin is on you. Mm-hmm. And they plucked that out of context and have used that to say, a girl with her boobs hanging out a little bit is by nature a stumbling block. And if a guy stumbles over that block, AKA violates her, coerces her into sex, whatever it may be, that they have equal blame. And that is mind-blowing to me as well. Mm-hmm. So now some of the lingo is changing. They're like, oh, sorry, we never meant to say you lose your worth every time you have sex. Oh, sorry, we didn't mean to say if your boobs are out, you deserved it. But I saw a message from Bethel Church in Reading that only came out a few months ago, and the pastor literally unbuttoned his shirt and pranced around the stage pretending his like boobs were hanging out and was like, oh, I don't know why men are coming after me. And I was like, sorry, 2019, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Stop. Like, so the message is not being received among a lot of people. And that's a mega church with a lot of accountability. And I will be holding him accountable. Yeah. Doing a video on that idiotic sermon.
Yeah. So in videos, you've mentioned that when you were 15, you led the chastity ceremony at your church.
I know, I'm evil.
What do you think made like the purity and modesty movement so appealing to you, and what do you think makes it appealing to everybody else that follows it?
Yeah, it took a while for me to break this down. Like, why did I fall for this so hard? And it's really simple to me. It's that ever since I was a little girl, I felt a very beautiful connection to the divine. I used to like kneel by my bedside and pray for wars to end. And I just felt really, really connected. And I feel like a lot of children do. And so I cultivated that for many years. And I was just in Catholicism. And I loved just going to church and listening to the music. And they weren't telling us messages about sexuality there or anything. So it was a pretty safe space to just like worship God and feel safe. And also in Catholicism, they're like, you messed up, go to confession, we'll sort it out. You know, it's like, you don't have to pay penance for the rest of your life for everything like you do in evangelicalism.
Yeah.
But, and people will say I misspoke on that and God can forgive you in evangelicalism, but not really, not the way they present these messages. But anyway, when I was 12 years old, I went to this evangelical church, and it was like they took that pure thing that I've had since I was a little girl, and they're like, this thing that you feel so connected to cries when you masturbate. He cries when you have sex with someone before marriage. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe that. I'm devastated to hear this. Like, I don't want to hurt God. Like, I love him so much. I'm so grateful someone is telling me this is carrying gravity to God, because I had never heard anything about sex in church. And yeah, like you said, I got so passionate about that, and it felt so important because they made it so important. Like at youth group, we talked about sex all the time. So I was like, let's do this. Let's go to the Christian bookstore. Let's get our little silver rings with keys on them, and let's pledge our virginity, which, by the way, is pretty easy to do when you're 15 and you've never been kissed and you're like a nerd in high school. It's like getting a little harder when you're out in LA and, you know.
Yeah.
And not that that's an excuse, but just saying they have kids as young as like 5 years old signing these pledges with their fathers, and their fathers telling them, if you love me, if you love God, you will do this.
Yeah.
And that's not even an autonomous decision at that point, because an 8-year-old can't consent to saving herself from it. Like, she doesn't even know what that is.
Yeah.
At 12, I really didn't even understand it.
Yeah. So, like you said, they usually try to impose fear on the kids who are
they
learning
love fear.
About it.
Mm-hmm.
And you also mentioned they cherry-picked verses like Romans 14:13, Psalm 37:11,
mm-hmm.
Psalm 31:10, and Timothy 2:9-10.
Ugh, so that Timothy one kills me.
So do you know of any other tactics they use to sort of
No, you're hitting the nail on the head. Fear is the number one tactic. And the ironic thing around that is that God, like, more than any other sin, like homosexuality, which, by the way, that word wasn't even in the Bible until 1946 in the English translation. So that's not even a real thing. But, you know, anything that they supposedly say pertains to homosexuality, there's 6 verses on it. There's like 8 verses on sexuality. There are 90 verses on fear. And pride is mentioned as the ultimate sin. And giving and loving others is elevated above all beautiful things that a person can do. I don't know when on earth the evangelical church spun that around and made, I keep saying they made an idol out of sexual purity. They made sexual purity the most Christian thing a Christian can be. If you're a heterosexual, cisgender, you know, girl that is marrying someone and saved herself, you are the epitome of all Christians. That is not represented in the Bible at all. And ironically, a fearless person, a prideless person, a person that gives to those in need, that is what the Bible says a Christian is.
Yeah.
So the fact that they use fear specifically, and also, by the way, when fear is spoken of, it's always spoken of about the enemy. And I don't think anyone listening that's not Christian, you don't have to think of the enemy, the devil, as this very literal being. Like, I believe in just like lower level energies. And if you want to put the satanic name to it, fine. But like low level energies are fear. And that just like it sinks in. It wakes you up at night. It makes you feel bad about yourself. It makes you afraid to make a move, to quit your job and do something better, to like tell someone you love them. You know, like fear holds you back from so many beautiful things. That is evil. That's darkness. The rest is light, and that's fearlessness.
Okay. I guess so. The not like the most important, but something that goes unquestioned is the men who are in charge of these things, how they're never questioned about why they say a younger girl is wearing certain things.
Yeah.
Like they're no fingers pointed at them. Mm-hmm. So could you elaborate more on, because you said when you were younger, they told you not to wear, I think, like a skirt and boots because it like would make others sin.
Yeah.
So why do you think that goes unquestioned? Like no one.
I mean, patriarchy is a trigger word for Christians because a lot of Christians believe patriarchy is God's like desire for life. But if you really read the Bible and if you really look at God's heart, patriarchy is a man-made concept. And it's not biblical. It's not Christ-like. Like Jesus never reflected a patriarchy. But that's, I think, the most simple answer. It's because women are supposed to be submissive. Women are supposed to serve. Women are supposed to be under you and supporting you. And if they're not supporting you by wearing a skirt and making life so hard for you that you're just lusting, that's on her. Because you are the leader and she was supposed to be your helpmeet, your lesser person, and she's not serving you properly.
Okay. And to clarify, you don't shame women for choosing to save themselves from marriage.
No, I love shaming women.
Because a lot of people seem to think there's this misunderstanding.
Yeah. No, I try to clarify it all the time. I basically believe all sexual choice that is consensual and where no harm is being done to somebody else is your choice. And I think you'll still mess up in that sometimes. Like if you're choosing to sleep with a lot of people, you will suffer repercussions of that, like I did, of like broken hearts and STDs and whatever comes with that. But like, I don't think there should ever be shame around it. It's just acknowledging the way things make you feel and the way you're honoring your body and the body of those around you. And if that choice is abstinence, amazing. Good for you.
Yeah.
But you have to stop shaming people that are not making that choice as well.
Okay. Do you have anything to tell like women who are unsure of their beliefs? Like you were at one point, who were questioning whether or not they should go ahead with it or just stay like abstaining.
I just encourage them to be fearless, like I said, and to really invite God into that space. And again, you don't have to use the word God, like that higher level energy, whatever you connect with, and see what you really, really understand about certain things. You know, if you, I don't know, you have to rid yourself of shame. Like I said, you have to buy Linda K. Klein's Pure if you're really, really on a journey because it's really clarifying. But also you, this is your life. You live this life. You have every right to live it the way that makes you the person that you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're reaching the end of our show. Thank you for coming.
It's been a
pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
And go check her out on God is Gray, the podcast and the YouTube channel.
Yes.
So thank you.